Moving Lanterns Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Moving Lanterns Podcast, episode 3.
Woohoo!
Episode 3 already.
I know, right?
It's gone quite quick. It feels like it's gone even quicker because we're pre-recording this. I mean, all podcasts are pre-recorded, but we're pre-recording it by a week.
Yes, we are.
It'll be released on time as usual, but next week we're at the Berlin Film Festival, so we're recording this on February the 1st.
Yes, so it's going to be slightly out of date.
Slightly out of date, because we haven't seen Big Hero 6 yet.
Nope.
Haven't seen Shaun the Sheep yet.
Nope.
And this is coming out after the BAFTAs.
Yes. So, good luck with this one.
It means we'll have loads to talk about next time.
Indeed. Next one will be a bumper one, because we'll also be talking about Berlin, and we're seeing animation things in Berlin as well, so...
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. Plus, we have got quite a lot to talk about this one. Written down. There's been quite a lot of news that we've talked about.
Oh, good.
So, throughout this podcast, we're going to talk about films that have just been released and films coming out on home video. Then we'll go on to talk about new releases in the next 2 weeks. And then we'll talk about news. And finally, we've got Film Club. And our film this week was Coraline. So we'll be talking about that a bit later. So first of all, have you seen any animated films or TV recently?
The only thing I've seen since the last time we recorded was I've seen a few episodes of Archer. Archer is really good. It's on it's a television programme that's on Netflix. That's about a spy organisation.
James Bond type guy.
That are unfortunately called ISIS. But they
have to change that recently.
They do change that, yeah. But it's all on Netflix and it's quite... it's very, very funny. It's full of adult humour and it's quite silly.
I've only watched a couple of episodes. I keep meaning to watch more. But in the first episode, it gets a bit racy and... my mum walked in while I was watching it, and she was like, "What are you watching?" Like, don't worry about it, it's fine. Just, we'll move on.
Yes.
I haven't seen any animated films either, but I did watch, after we watched Rugrats movie last time, I watched 5 or 6 episodes of All Grown Up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember this. This was after they did the Rugrats, they finished Rugrats, and then they based the characters in sort of when they were 11, 10, 11.
Oh, really?
And did a series based on that.
I think
they did 5 series, actually. And it's really odd, because all the characterisations are pretty much the same, apart from Tommy, who's a generic non-character, pretty much. He's no longer the leader. Like, the most interesting characters in All Grown Up are, well, it's Chucky, and, I guess, Angelica.
Does he have hair?
He does! Also, Dill is amazing in All Grown Up. He's hilarious. He's like a conspiracy nut obsessed with UFOs.
Oh, okay. I might look this up.
It's really interesting how they took the cartoon and sort of just made an older version.
Yeah.
Because you don't see that. In cartoons. In television.
No.
I mean, they did it in, I guess, One Tree Hill. They did a 5-year time skip.
Yes, they did. And you get kind of the odd television drama where it spans decades.
Monsters Inc. and Monsters University is taking those characters and putting them in a different period of
their lives. Yeah, because you know, there was things like Our Friends in the North that did it over spanning decades, and there was a drama called White Heat a couple of years ago. That did it, but it wasn't a case of, so these are these characters when they're like 15 and then these are these characters when they're like 50. It was it spanned the whole period of time.
Mm-hmm.
There was no jump.
All grown up really interesting about it, because it's a cartoon as well. It's the same voice actors. They didn't need to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's because the series finale of, I think it was the series finale of the Rugrats, was a time hop.
Okay.
And then people responded to it so well, they thought, oh, we can make a whole series of this. But it's really odd, because the reason they used animation for Rugrats was because they're babies, and obviously you can't film live-action babies. But with All Grown Up, they're sort of 11, 12-year-old kids. There's no reason for it to be animation specifically, but it works. I mean, they can still do the voice actors and everything. But it's just a really interesting choice.
Yes.
And then we also recently watched... It's not an animation film, but it's got special effects, visual effects in it. We watched The World's End.
We did.
With the modern art visual effects, I'm not the biggest fan of that.
I'm just a big fan of the film in general. It was filmed in my hometown, so completely biased.
We got lots of facts of, that's a pub, that's a railway station, not a pub.
Yes, I know. It was very useful, wasn't it? yes, it's a very enjoyable film.
But I think the moment with the modern art sculptures, that's where I sort of... lose believability.
I find that funny because that's where you lose believability. The entire thing is ridiculous.
I should say I lose suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, I think it might be to do with the fact that that isn't actually really explained.
Yeah.
It's just a thing.
Hmm.
Which, I kind of understand, but I think they were just kind of throwing everything in.
Yeah, but that's one of the very few moments in that film that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
But as someone we're watching with pointed out, it's a good way to up the ante.
Yeah.
And make it more perilous.
Yeah.
Anything else to add for films you've seen recently?
No.
No.
The Moving Lanterns Podcast.
So, films released this week and next week on home video, and by this week and next week I mean when you're listening to it, not when we're recording it. There's quite a lot. There's, on the 9th of February, a film called Otoro Monogatari, which is an anime. That's probably not how you pronounce it.
Probably not.
But I'm going with that. 9th of February, The Unbeatables, which was that football film that was cashing in on the World Cup that was released last year. Mm-hmm. Apparently it wasn't that bad. I never saw it. It's got the voices of Rupert Grint and Rob Brydon and Anthony Head and a ton of British actors.
I don't remember this film at all. I don't think I was in the country.
I don't think you were in the country.
No, and it definitely wasn't a thing in America.
I think it's being released in America this year.
Oh, okay.
In the next couple of months.
Yeah.
16th of February, there's a re-release of SpongeBob SquarePants, the movie, coming out, which I remember being hilarious. I haven't watched it since it came out. I might not hold up.
But I think I probably will.
It's in anticipation of SpongeBob 2, which, yes, I believe was released in America this week.
Was it?
Think so.
It looks very good.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
In a very childish, silly way.
Oh, the trailer made me laugh loads. Yeah. So.
Again, in a childish, silly way.
Yeah, yeah.
16th of February as well, there's another My Little Pony DVD, because they're always coming out. It's called May the Best Pet Win. I don't know what that's about. 16th of February, Shangri-La Collection. 16th of February as well, Phineas and Ferb Star Wars. I love Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah.
I'm happy that that's got a DVD release, because a lot of these cartoons, you can't find series on DVDs, you can only find specials.
Mm-hmm.
And the Star Wars is a special. And I can't remember if it's the Star Wars one or the Christmas one, but had Simon Pegg and Nick Frost in it playing Sean and Ed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it might have been the Christmas episode, but I never watched it, but apparently it was really funny. Also a really weird choice for a 15 rated film,
yeah,
just to be a Phineas and Ferb. 16th of February, From Inside, the Gary Numan Special Edition. I don't know what that means, I don't know what that is, but it was a thing. These are based on Amazon listings, so I don't know. 16th of February, Lego Ninjingo, Masters of Spinjitzu. 16th of February, Battle Girls Time Paradox Collection. 16th of February, Barbie and Princess Power. Barbie films are still a thing.
Excellent.
I had a Barbie film on video when
did
I was
really?
A kid. I did.
Wow.
Everyone bought me Barbie stuff when I was little because I was little and blonde.
Nobody bought me Barbie stuff, ever.
Although, to be fair, I had some pretty cool Barbie stuff. I had the Barbie windsurfer. She had a windsurfing board.
Mm.
It was pretty cool. Mm. 16th of February as well, Sarah and Duck, Balloon Race and Other Stories. And 16th of February, The Book of Life is coming out on DVD already.
Oh, okay.
That was quick.
Was it?
It felt quick to me.
I don't know when it came out in this country, but I know because in America it came out for the Day of the Dead, I thought. So, like,
that was
like October, so you would expect it to be out now. I don't know when it came out here.
Maybe I just lost track of time. It might not have been, average, but it seemed quick to me. And then new releases in cinemas in the next 2 weeks. 10th of February, Wolves and Dogs Howl for Full Moon is released in London, according to IMDb. But I looked it up online. It's made by Pathé and Warner Brothers and directed by Cody Cameron, who directed Cloud with a Chance of Meatballs 2. But I can't find anything else on it. I can't find a release, like where it's being released. I can't find where it's being screened, but it's still listed on IMDb, so good luck if you can see it. 14th of February, there's a film called The Secret Princess, again, not a wide release. It's written and directed by Sagan Williams, and it's his first big project, or her first big project, I'm not sure.
Their
first big project. Cast of unknown actors, and it's a low budget of only $500,000.
Oh, wow.
So, and it's in London, so that's what, £270,000? Around that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a very low budget film. And then 11th of February, Strange Magic, which we spoke about before. George Lucas wrote that film, or wrote the story. It's by Lucasfilm Animation and ILM. On IMDb, they describe the film as a new animated film is a madcap fairy tale musical inspired by A Midsummer Night's Dream, which I didn't know this. Popular songs from the past six decades help tell the tale of a colourful cast of goblins, elves, fairies and imps and their hilarious misadventures sparked by the battle over a powerful potion. It's a PG. Cast of Alan Cumming, Evan Rachel Wood, Elijah Kelly, and Maya Rudolph, who's also in Big Hero 6. It has not been getting good reviews in America. I didn't know it was based on A Midsummer Night's Dream.
I have a fun fact about Maya Rudolph.
Go for it.
She's married to Paul Thomas Anderson.
Is she?
Yeah, I know, right?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Ah.
Sorry, that's like completely unrelated to animation, but
interesting.
Mm.
Special mention, Jupiter Ascending comes out on February 6th.
It does. I'm quite excited for that. I mean, I know it
looks changed
really,
your tune on that.
Have I?
Yeah.
It looks really stupid. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's going to be very good. But I think it will be quite amusing. I really, like... Well, I read somewhere that Sean Bean's in it. Where's a good start? And I read somewhere that he's, like, half squirrel. Or something like that. Is like anywhere... where Sean Bean is half rodent, I'm like, I'm in.
I can't take Sean Bean seriously since we played Cards Against Humanity and Sean Bean came up a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm like, it's great because you know he's going to die, so you can just prepare yourself for that.
Oh, no, that wasn't Sean Bean in Cards Against Humanity,
wasn't it? Oh, no, that was Sean Penn.
Sean Penn. What? Mixing up Sean Bean and Sean Penn. That's.
I just didn't mention it because I was like, I can't remember mentioning Sean Bean in Cards Against Humanity. I just moved on. Yeah, no, that was Sean Penn.
But Sean Bean's the one who dies in everything. Who also does
VO2. Boromir.
He does VO2 adverts. We're drinking tea again, if you hear slurping.
Sorry.
It's fine, just so you know. He's Boromir, yes. And he's Ned Stark.
Yes.
Yeah, I know who Sean Bean is. And he's the voice of VO2 adverts. He's the cat. I like to think he's the cat.
He's the evil one in National Treasure.
Oh, yeah, he is. Mm. He doesn't die in that film.
No, he doesn't die in that film.
He just goes to jail.
Yeah.
And then he's back for the sequel.
Yeah, he should die.
The Moving Lanterns podcast.
Okay, moving on to news.
Yes.
Were you going to do a news segment?
I was, but I resisted.
Do it.
No.
Okay. So, the Annie Awards were on the 31st of January, which is last night for us, but for you it's a week ago. Lots of winners. This is the big animated industry awards. There's a lot of categories, I'll just go through them, we can stop and talk about ones we want to. So, Best Animated Feature was How to Train Your Dragon 2, which seems to be doing very well at awards.
Just, it really annoys me.
Just a sigh from you there.
Yeah, I'm just, you know my opinion by now.
Best Animated Special Production was Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey by Voyager Pictures LLC. I'm not sure what that is, but I think it could be like one of the IMAX films they show at Kennedy Space Center or one of those type things.
Oh, okay.
Which are quite good. I've been to one of the IMAX at the Kennedy Space Center.
I went to an IMAX at the Museum of Air and Space History Museum.
The one in Washington.
The one in Washington.
I went into there. I had to queue for like 3 hours to get in there.
Yeah, we went into there and we went to an IMAX screening there. But we went to one about D-Day.
That's a really odd thing for me. Oh, it's Air and Space.
Air and Space.
Sorry, I was just space.
We could have gone to a space one, but it wasn't on at the right time, so we went to the one about D-Day. It was all animated, actually. It was quite good.
I might be wrong. Cosmos might be something entirely different, but I think it could be one of those.
Yeah.
Best Animated Short Subject was Feast, which by Walt Disney Animation Studios, which is the little dog animation that's running before Big Hero 6. It looks very cute, and I look forward to seeing it. Best Animated Television or Broadcast Commercial is Flight of the Stories by Aardman Animation. I don't remember this commercial, but it's Aardman.
Yep.
I wonder if it was a commercial in America.
Possibly. We can look it up.
But I'm always happy to see Aardman win stuff. Best Animated TV or Broadcast Production for Preschool Children is Tumbleleaf by Amazon Studios.
Oh, Amazon.
Amazon getting in on the TV game.
Yeah.
Best Animated Television or Broadcast Production for a Children's Audience is Gravity Falls on Disney Television Animation. Have you seen Gravity Falls?
No.
Gravity Falls is one of these shows that I keep getting told I'd really enjoy. Apparently it's very similar to, I don't know if you know the podcast Welcome to Night Vale? Or Twin Peaks.
Oh,
it's very sort of odd and weird things happen.
Okay.
I keep getting told to watch it. It's on the Disney Channel. Best General Audience Animated Television or Broadcast Production, The Simpsons.
Okay.
Which, best at the moment? I guess that's not a huge category for animated general audience. But The Simpsons has been going longer than I've been alive.
But like,
it's not on top of its game.
No, but like, what are your options?
Yeah.
Really? Because I guess you could also incorporate like BoJack Horseman or something.
I haven't watched it. Is that not adult? This is general. General audience.
What are your options for general apart from The Simpsons?
Well, Futurama's not on telly anymore.
No, there's nothing, is there? That's why it won.
Yeah, Creature Comforts isn't on anymore.
Because all of the ones I can think of are either adult or children.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the middle.
No.
So that's actually not that much of a surprise.
Best Video Game. Annie Awards, of course, covers animation and video games as well, which is very cool of them. Valiant Hearts for Great War by Ubisoft. I haven't played it. I don't know.
I don't play video games.
You're missing out.
I'm sorry.
They're so much fun.
They don't sustain my interest.
You clearly haven't played a Lego video game with me then.
I haven't.
You haven't, no.
Do you know, I haven't really played video games since the N64.
I never had an N64.
Yeah.
My cousin did. It was awesome. Best student film, Jason Rayner, My Big Brother, from Savannah College of Art and Design. Animated effects in an animated production. So this is animation within animation. Big Hero 6 got it. Animated effects in a live action production. Edge of Tomorrow / Live, Die, Repeat. Got it.
Did it?
Yeah. Which I haven't seen yet. I have on DVD. I keep meaning to watch it. But apparently it's very, very good. I hear nothing but good things about that film.
I've heard that too, but to me it just looks like Source Code.
It does look like Source Code.
But
it's like a cross between Source Code and Halo.
Doesn't that... I don't know what's included in that category as animation effects. I don't know what's considered animation effects. But I'm quite surprised that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes didn't win.
Yeah, but this is more green screen stuff, I think.
Is it more green screen stuff?
I'm not sure, though. It's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Character animation in an animated television or broadcast production is Wander Over Yonder, which is Disney Television again. I don't know the show. Character animation in an animated feature production, How to Train Your Dragon 2, one again. Which in terms of character animation makes sense to me. Because there are emotions in that film. And they get them pretty well on the acting scale.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the animation I have a problem with, was How to Train Your Dragon 2. It was the writing, so...
Character animation in a live-action production, Dawn of Planet of the Apes, there you go.
Oh, there we are.
It's under character animation.
Right.
Yeah.
That does make sense, actually, because it's a character.
That does.
Yeah.
Character animation in a video game, Assassin's Creed Unity, which is that game that was really glitched when it came out, and people had trouble playing it. But I like the Assassin's Creed franchise. I think it's got strong characters. They're making a film coming
they
out.
They are. Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender next year. Not based on this game, it's based on one of the older games, but... pretty strong characters, isn't
Michael
it?
Fassbender.
Yep. Also, apparently, Assassin's Creed Heist is amazing, if you want to watch it. I think it's called Heist. You want to watch it, play it, whatever. Character design in an animated feature production, The Book of Life.
Okay.
In terms of character design, that makes sense. It's pretty bold and strong character design and something a little bit different from what we normally see in CG films. Directing in an animated TV broadcast production, Disney's Mickey Mouse, for Aaron Springer. Directing in an animated feature production, Dean DeBlois, How to Train Dragon 2 again. You're not happy with this?
I'm not going to repeat my opinion on How to Train Dragon 2. It's fine.
But in terms of directing, that's not story.
No, I can't, I've got to be honest, I can't really remember it well enough, that, like, in terms of direction and, like, shot selection.
I can't remember a lot, but I do remember there was a pretty good battle sequence.
Yeah, I really can't. I can't really comment on it. I can remember the Lego movie, and I remember that was directed very well.
Music in an animated TV and broadcast production, Christopher Willis for Disney Mickey Mouse again. Music in an animated feature production, How to Train Your Dragon 2, again. How to Train Your Dragon 2 did very well here. Production design in an animated TV broadcast production, Mickey Shorts on Disney for Narina Sokolova. Production design in an animated feature production, The Box Trolls. Always good to see Laker getting something.
Yeah, and I think that sounds like an appropriate award for him to get in terms of production design because it's stop motion, The Box Trolls. So,
yeah.
Actually, yeah, it just does make like a lot of sense.
Storyboarding in an animated TV broadcast production, Legend of Korra, Venom of the Red Lotus for Joaquin Dos Santos. Nickelodeon Animation Studios. I believe Legend of Korra finished this year, so it's good to give them a nod when they finished a long-running series like that. Storyboarding in an animated feature production. Truong Tron Son Mei in How to Train Your Dragon 2, again, for DreamWorks. Voice acting in an animated TV broadcast production. This is one of my favourite categories. I love when voice acting awards happen. Bill Farmer as the voice of Goofy and Grandma in Disney Mickey Mouse on Disney Television Animation. I feel I should watch Disney's Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Voice acting in an animated feature production, Sir Ben Kingsley as the voice of Archibald Snatcher in The Box Trolls.
Excellent. I love Ben Kingsley.
He was not there to pick up his award. Someone else picked it up on his behalf, which was a shame. But I believe there were another awards happening in Hollywood at the same time.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember what awards. It's award season. There's lots of awards going on. Writing in an animated TV broadcast production, Disney Mickey Mouse again for Derek Backman. Writing in an animated feature production, now you've got the Lego movie.
Finally. Oh, at least they didn't give the writing to How to Train Your Dragon 2. That would have really annoyed me.
So Phil Lord and Christopher Miller got writing for the Lego movie. editorial in an animated TV broadcast production was for Ilya Owens for Disney and Mickey Mouse again. An editorial in an animated feature production, How to Train Your Dragon 2. Lots of awards for How to Train Your Dragon there. But like I say, I like the Annies. They cover pretty much every aspect of animated films.
The Moving Lanterns podcast.
Next news story. There's a Beauty and the Beast live action remake.
Yes.
Starring Emma Watson as Belle.
Yes.
So there's an article in The Atlantic this week on why is Disney trying so hard to dilute its brand. It's the name of the article. I'll stick a link to it on the website as always. It talks about how Disney are remaking all their animated properties. So Cinderella and the Jungle Book are the ones coming out soon. And The Atlantic say it's an admission that they can no longer keep a tight rein on their brand as streamings devalued the idea of the Disney vault. It's a very interesting article. I recommend you read it. What are your thoughts on Disney remaking everything as live action?
I think it's quite interesting because in the article it cites the example of Maleficent and Alice in Wonderland.
Which aren't exactly remakes.
No, they're following the trope of the reimagined fairy tale, and that really annoys me because they're always rubbish.
But that's what Disney have been doing in their animation department as well. They reimagined Rapunzel as Tangled and Snow Queen's Frozen.
Yes. See my earlier point about them always being rubbish. But
you're wrong.
What I find interesting about the Cinderella that's about to come out, because I've watched the trailer for that, that doesn't seem to be reimagined.
It's basically the same film.
That looks like, unless the trailer is misleading, which it might be.
I hope it is.
It just looks like it's going to be Cinderella, which is a bit weird. But it does, to be fair, it does look like a very handsomely mounted production. Like, it looks very pretty. Everyone in it is very good. It's being directed by Ken Branagh. He's very good. So, we'll see, I guess.
I hope the trailer's misleading.
Yeah.
Because Cinderella is such a classic story that it's almost become cliché.
Yeah.
And I think if you watch it and it's exactly the same thing, or if I watch it and exactly the same thing, I'll probably find it boring.
Maybe. And my other point about this entire thing is the fact that Emma Watson has been cast
as Belle.
As Belle. Which I find really odd.
Belle is one of my favourite Disney princesses.
Given her current stance on feminism.
Belle is one of the more feminist classic Disney princesses.
Is she? Sorry, not it.
She is, I would say, initially. Maybe her story isn't, but as a character, I think she is.
Because she falls in love with her captor. It's just Stockholm syndrome.
That's what I mean about her story. But if you look at Belle at the beginning of the film, she doesn't care about getting married and in a relationship. She's into intellectualism and reading.
But it's kind of, I find it really interesting because it's kind of quite, I suspect they're going to remake it so that it's quite classically post-feminist in that she's going to be independent at the beginning, then she's going to choose that she's going to be with a man, and that's because that's what makes her happy, and the return to the family sphere is what makes her happy. And that is actually going completely against what Emma Watson is kind of standing for. And I do find it, okay, maybe I'm be completely wrong, maybe it will be a really different take on Beauty and the Beast. I doubt it will be. She does kind of fundamentally have to end up with the Beast. And I find it like, it's just a really strange decision from her because it is quite hypocritical. It's sending mixed messages to me. And I find that quite problematic because she just about won me over. And now I don't like her again. So.
No, like I say, I really like Belle. She's one of my favourite Disney princesses.
Yeah.
It's between her and Mulan, probably, and Anna from Frozen.
I find Anna from Frozen so annoying.
I love Anna. I can see how she'd be annoying, but I find her hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm quite excited about it, even though in terms of the live action thing, I'm not on board. I think it sort of devalues the originals. It's like saying we don't care about these anymore, the live action ones are the important ones.
Yes. Well, and like, another aspect of it, side of it, is like we say Maleficent is quite a feminist film, and I've spoken to quite a lot of people who are like, it's, who say that it's a fantastic film and are like, absolutely love it because it's a feminist, it has a feminist thread running through it. And while I appreciate that is commendable, that doesn't then negate the necessity for the film to actually be good. Because I've actually had conversations with people in which they're like, yeah, and Maleficent, it got panned by the critics. You know why that is? It's because they're all patriarchal white men. And while the majority of critics are white men, they're not criticising it because they're like, ha ha ha, we're going to down with the women. They're criticising it because the film isn't made very well. And it's not written very well. It was paced badly. It was performed quite badly. And just kind of this habit of kind of, if something's slightly feminist, then hooray, let's just forget about
it. You can't dislike it.
You can't dislike it. And that really annoys me, because why? Why can't we stand here and say, actually, I expect a film to be feminist and to be a good film? They're not like mutually exclusive things.
That's one of your problems with Frozen, isn't it?
Yeah, it's also one of my problems with Frozen. Yeah, so to a lesser extent, Frozen is considerably better than Maleficent. But it's just, it does really frustrate me. And I hope, maybe Beauty and the Beast will turn it round. Cinderella will turn it round.
We don't know.
Yeah.
I doubt it, though.
I mean, well, I'm looking forward to seeing Cate Blanchett as the wicked stepmother, regardless of anything else, so.
Next news story, just a brief thing. IGN has a clip that Disney's released of how they animated Baymax, which is very interesting for people who are interested in animation. They use the term unanimate or unimate. I recommend watching it. That's just a little thing. AWN.com have reported that Fox Animation have acquired the rights to Mr. Men and Little Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Big part of my childhood.
Yeah.
Big part of your childhood?
Sort of. Not really.
It's a lot bigger in the UK than anywhere else.
Yeah. They were like present in my childhood, but I wouldn't describe them as a big part.
Sean Levy's producing. He's behind the Night at Museum films.
Okay.
I think he knows how to make a solid family film. But more recently, he did The Internship, which was the Owen Wilson Vince Vaughn film.
I'm pulling a face.
She is. Which I enjoyed. A lot of people hated it. But I think it suffered from the problem of going for a PG-13 audience instead of an R.
It was just... To me, it was more an issue that it was, like, out of date.
Yeah.
It was an out-of-date concept.
There was a great article in The Onion of The Internship's Best Comedy of 2005.
Exactly.
But I quite enjoyed it. I mean, I know a lot of people who really don't like it. And the whole Google thing of it being pushing the brand.
Yeah.
Was an issue. But I think Sean Levy knows how to make a solid family comedy.
Yeah.
So I look forward to it. It mildly annoys me that Aardman aren't doing it.
Yeah.
Because I think an Aardman,
oh, that would be cool. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But yeah, Fox Animation. There you go. Next story, Disney have released some information about Eleanor of Avalor, who is their newest Disney princess on TV, joining Sophia the First and then having a spin-off. Disney aren't officially labelling her as either Hispanic or Latina because of potential controversies surrounding those terms. She's presented as a Disney princess inspired by Latin cultures.
Mm.
Thoughts on that?
I think it's quite interesting. I read an interesting article over the past week about how Disney have begun kind of repackaging their princesses to appeal to more kind of modern cultures, things like with the Frozen, more feminist, and with Tangled as well. They're shown, like, in their branding, they're shown to be much more active rather than being just kind of passive individuals. Same with Brave. And I think it's quite interesting, and it kind of the conclusion from this article was that all the way through, it can kind of be traced all the way through in that the brand always represents what they feel society is requiring at that time. Like, it kind of, it's a reflection. So back in the 1950s, they were very passive and sort of housewifey because that's what the 1950s were like. So the introduction of, how do they describe it?
A Disney princess inspired by Latin cultures.
I would say indicates that they are finally acknowledging the need for diversity,
mm-hmm.
and acknowledging the massive Spanish-speaking population in America currently.
Yeah.
And you know, Latin America.
Yeah, and it's their second Princess TV series. They've got Sophia the First, yeah. and then they've got this one, Eleanor of Avalor.
Mm.
Yeah, it's only a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's positive.
Shows Disney are on board with feminism and diversity, yes. which is always good.
Yes.
DreamWorks producer Christine Belson has been named as president of Sony Animation. She's previously produced The Croods. Did you watch The Croods?
No.
I enjoyed The Croods. And she executive produced the first How to Train Your Dragon film. And she was also an executive producer on BOO, Bureau of Overworldly Operations, which was meant to come out in October.
That was the one that got... Mm.
It's got halted as part of DreamWorks' restructuring plan.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's your last piece of news for this week. I'm sure a lot will happen in the week but between us recording this and the podcast coming out. But
yes.
There's not a lot we can do about that.
The Moving Lanterns podcast.
So now we move on to film club.
Mm.
This week was Coraline. Hey Charlie, did you watch Coraline this week?
No.
No.
No. Sorry.
So
I'm sorry.
Before I go into talking about Coraline, what do you know about the film?
I don't actually know that much about the film. I know kind of more about the book than I do about the film.
Go for it. I haven't read the book.
Neither have I. It's about a girl.
Well done.
Called Coraline.
Yes, not Caroline.
Who, something, I don't know exactly, I can't remember exactly, but it results in kind of things being taken away or like life. I don't know much. Carry on.
So the plot of Coraline is she moves to a new house, middle of the countryside with her parents, discovers this secret door, makes a new friend. He gives her this doll he found in his grandmother's attic. But it looks exactly like her, except it has buttons for eyes. She goes through the secret door, or she dreams she goes through the secret door, and she finds her other mother and father, who have buttons for eyes instead of real ones, and they seem perfect, perfect family. She comes back to her world, is kind of upset with it, doesn't like where it's going, she doesn't like being away from her friends. So she goes through the door for real, and it basically devolves into this plot of the other mother wants to keep her, but the only way she can is if she took out her eyes and sewed in buttons instead.
Oh.
And it basically turns into a horror film.
Cool.
It's very sinister. I really liked it. It's, yeah, extremely dark for a family film. It kind of reminded me of a super dark version of Totoro,
mm-hmm.
with the whole going to a new house.
I thought Totoro was quite dark, so...
Totoro is quite dark. Coraline's darker.
Okay.
I was actually surprised at how much they got away with. Like, even the opening is this doll coming in and then this spiderweb arms taking it apart and making up this new doll that looks like Coraline.
Yeah.
And it's really sinister. Jennifer Saunders and Dawn French voice.
Do they?
They voice the mad couple living downstairs, a couple of women.
Excellent.
Who are actors, and it's always good to see French and Saunders in things. They were great in this. But there is a line they say where they offer Coraline hand-pulled taffy from Brighton. Which...
That doesn't make sense.
Taffy's not a thing.
Taffy is not a thing here.
Brighton Rock, I'd understand. Also, taffy's disgusting.
Do you remember that big bag of taffy we bought on Pier 39 in San Francisco? And that sat in my bag for the next 2 months.
That was so
disgusting.
As
I travelled the States, because no one wanted it.
We thought, we'll get some taffy. We're always hearing about it. Everyone goes on about it.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll love it. So we bought quite a big bag, had about 3 pieces each, and we're like, this is gross. It tastes like if Malwan had no flavour.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so having eaten taffy, hand-pulled taffy from Brighton is neither accurate or appealing.
No.
The film is purportedly set in America, but it looks a whole lot like England. Like,
isn't it a Neil Gaiman book?
It's a Neil Gaiman book, but they name-drop Michigan, and they name-drop Americans and Iowa and American states, but it looks a lot like England. It's the sort of film that if I'd have watched when I was a child, I would have been terrified.
Mm.
And I loved that. I love dark films. I didn't like The Grinch. That scared me in a this-is-really-weird way.
Right.
Whereas other dark films or dark TV shows like Goosebumps or The Demon Headmaster...
Oh, can I just say... So, The Goosebumps is on Netflix.
Is it really?
Yeah, Goosebumps is on Netflix, everybody. And I was watching a bit and I realised, as I was watching Goosebumps, that I thought Goosebumps and The Demon Headmaster were the same thing.
Different shows.
Different shows. Not the same thing. One of them is American and one of them is English.
Goosebumps is American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And completely different.
Are You Afraid of the Dark was the other one.
I don't remember that.
I think that was on Nickelodeon or something.
Okay.
But those sort of scary shows I really liked when I was a kid. There was Black Hole High was another one and Jeopardy.
Oh, I love Jeopardy.
Yeah, that was
Jeopardy
dark.
Was so good. Yeah.
But I'd forgotten until recently how dark that was. I looked up for Google. The Wikipedia synopsis.
Yeah.
That was a dark show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sort of those dark things I really like. The idea of sort of horror films and scary films for kids, I'm on board with. I don't think there's enough of that happening.
Yeah.
Other than Coraline, I can't think of any recently. I guess that's what they could kind of do. I don't know how scary Paranorman is.
Paranorman's quite scary, but, like, it's also quite funny.
Okay.
There's a lot of humour in it.
There's a bit of humour in Coraline, but,
I mean, well, Paranorman gets really, really horrible. Because the plot of Paranorman, at the end of Paranorman, they discover that the witch that is haunting the town is actually an 11-year-old girl who got executed for being a witch.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's dark.
And he has to talk her down because the reason why she's cursed the town, the reason why she's being so aggressive is because she's really scared. And he has to and they kind of they become united because he is as ostracized as she was, and they sort of, you know, kind of become friends. But it's like it does, that's really dark. I mean, it's not scary, but it's horrible.
Yeah, see, Coraline is more scary than dark. Yeah. I say, like, the Buttons Rising is super sinister. It's so creepy, and just the way the film's shot, like stop motion, I think comes across as a bit creepy anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, Wallace and Gromit doesn't, but there are moments in Wallace and Gromit, like in A Close Shave. This is just the stop motion reference point I have, because I grew up watching that. But in A Close Shave, when sort of the sheep and the are being transported in the lorry, I find that very creepy.
I used to find the wrong trousers really scary. Like the notion of the wrong trousers.
Mm. But I think stop motion is very well suited to sort of sinister.
Yeah.
And the character designs in Coraline also pretty sinister.
Mm.
But no, I recommend it. It's a good film. I can't believe I hadn't watched it before.
Mm.
So yeah, if you get the chance.
I will definitely try and take a look, because it sounds super interesting.
And if you do manage to watch it, we can talk about it.
We can.
So if anyone listening watched it, let us know what you thought about it on the website in the comments of this podcast. Anything else you want to add for the podcast? We need to decide what to watch next week.
Oh yeah.
It's February, new stuff has just been added to Netflix.
Okay. Oh wait, there's something on Netflix. Oh, there's Brave.
I love Brave.
I've never seen Brave.
You've never seen Brave?
No.
Should we watch Brave?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
Because we were talking about it as well.
Yeah.
Alright, we'll watch Brave for next time. Do you have anything to add at the end of the podcast?
I have a final thought. Can you say any final thoughts?
Any final thoughts, Charlie?
I am bad and that's good. I will never be good and that's not bad. There's no one I'd rather be than me.
Wreck-It Ralph.
Yep.
Yeah, that was an easy one, Charlie. You'll have to make it harder next time. Bye.
Bye.
The Moving Lanterns Podcast.